It probably says a lot about me that when you said that the bell is bigger, my first thought was, "Oh, you can stick your whole head in it."
No, that's the tuba. You can stick your whole head in the tuba.
Oh, okay.
Rusty Quill presents Enthusiasm. Hello, friends and fans, and welcome to Enthusiasm, the show where we talk about a few of our favourite things. I am your host, Helen Gould, one of the best Rusty Quillers, and today we're talking about playing instruments and being musicians, and I am tremulously excited to be joined by Kathy, Faye and Jeffrey. As always, our guests shall introduce themselves alphabetically, which means Faye, you are starting us off. What are your pronouns and what do you do?
My name is Faye Roberts. My pronouns are either Zizia or they, them, if Zizia is too complicated. My day job involves writing lists for other people and telling them, no, we can't afford no. I'm so sorry. And the fun stuff later at night involves voice acting, including for Rusty Quill.
Lovely. I do love the various ways that you describe your day job. It's all very exciting. Kathy, you should have gone first. C comes before F.
That's okay. It was nice not to go first for once.
Oh my God. It's because I wrote down the names of who's going to be on this and I put Faye first.
Oh. My middle name begins with A, if that helps.
Today my name can start with a K. It's totally cool. It's all good.
Yeah, but then you'd be going third off. It's okay. Just the audience will just now know that that is the level that my brain is operating on during this recording. Aww. It's fine. Kathy, please give us your pronouns and tell us what you do.
Hi, I'm Kathy Ranella. Pronouns are she, her, and I'm one of the audio masters at Rusty Quill.
Jeffrey, what are your pronouns and what do you do?
Hi, my name's Jeffrey Nils Gardner. My pronouns are they, them, and I am no longer one of the best Rusty Quillers.
We're so devastated. You are one of the best former Rusty Quillers.
I'll take that. Yeah, so I am a sound designer, audio fiction director, and producer. Right now, I think, let's call it, I am the producer for Vox's Phoebe Reads a Mystery. I am the executive producer of Unwell, a Midwestern Gothic mystery. And I am a professor at Northwestern University here in Illinois. And a bunch of other stuff, but I can't actually talk about it right now.
Right. Obvious question first. What instruments do you all play and how did you start playing them?
So I play a bunch of different instruments. I would say that my primary instrument through most of my life has been the violin.
Oh,
I have been playing for a little over 30 years now, to avoid having to do the math at how old I actually am. Yeah,
that's
so around 30 plus years. I also play mandolin and octave mandolin and cool. Banjo and boron and...
What was that last one?
Boron. It's an Irish frame drum.
Yes.
Yes.
And I program modular synths.
Wow.
As well as I kind of have a sideline in building and playing... what I call electroacoustic instruments. They're just weird circuits and, you know, pickups and stuff like that that make chaotic, horrific noises. They're a lot of fun.
In this house, we love and appreciate chaotic, horrific noises. Mm-hmm. Can we go back? You said that you played, was it mandolin and then something else mandolin?
Yeah, so I play the regular small mandolin, which is an 8-stringed... Uh-huh. Instrument about the size of a ukulele. It's actually tuned and has intervals that are exactly the same as a violin, so that's a very easy switch over. Mm-hmm. And then I also, you'll see this on video, I guess. I also play the octave mandolin. This is my electric. And It is, I made this out of a 3/4 scale guitar, which has the same scale length as a regular octave mandolin. So it's 8-stringed and just every string is a full octave down from the regular mandolin.
Oh, that's so cool. That's super cool. I always forget that you can get different instruments that are just like, you know, big brothers like to the other instruments, or like little baby siblings. Like saxophones, and they have like a soprano saxophone and stuff like that. Kathy, what about you?
I have one instrument that I play with several others that I kind of adopted on and off over the years. So I've primarily played tuba for the last, oh God, now I have to do the math. Sure. Let's say at least 20 years.
Ooh.
Probably. That was my primary instrument through school and into college. And then probably the second longest is bass trombone. And then there's been a smattering of other instruments picked up here and there through classes in college. So at one point I was playing a little bit piano. One year I was learning some snare drum. Another was it oboe or bassoon? It was oboe. Oboe, that was pretty fun. And at one point I tried to pick up bass guitar with big success and then put it back down.
You've got all those low instruments.
Yeah. Oh, I love the low instruments. And that's where my eardrums live. I just love them so much. Yeah.
So is a bass trombone just a very big trombone?
Actually, it's similar in size to a regular trombone, but the bell is larger and there's extra tubing. So that allows you to get the lower octaves that you would normally assign to a bass trombone as opposed to a regular one. And because of the extra tubing in it, will often come with a valve.
Oh.
That allows you to switch to the additional tubing that you need to hit those low notes. Whereas a normal trombone, there's not usually, sometimes there's valves, but it's not.
Yeah, it's usually just the slide.
Yeah.
It probably says a lot about me that when you said that the bell is bigger, my first thought was, oh, you can stick your whole head in it.
No, that's the tuba. You can stick your whole head in the tuba.
Oh, okay.
The bass trombone, you can wear like a very large hat.
Oh, lovely.
You can just stick it with a very long, you know, brass trail behind you.
Nice. Gorgeous. And Faye, what instruments do you play and how did you get started?
Oh, crikey. I guess instruments I have played, I started with, probably like most people in the UK, I started with a recorder. And then piano. Because there was a piano in my house from when I was like 3, something like that. Went for lessons when I was about 6, maybe 7. I think it was 6 though, because that was apparently controversial. I don't know. Don't know why. And then, and this is terribly middle class, I was asked, you know, would I like to learn a second instrument? And my submission that French horn is cool was rejected by my parents, who I think had horrible visions of how that, you know, someone learning French horn would go. So clarinet was choice B, but I did fall in love with it. Also a great deal more, what's the word I want? Portable. You break it down and it goes into a tiny little case.
Yeah.
I think I focused more on singing. I'm a classically trained singer. So I've been singing.
Oh.
Yeah. And I've been singing in choirs and such and in competition since I was 4. In choir since I was 3 or 4 and in competition since I was 5, which I suspect is a very South Wales thing. I tended to assume that was normal. And then when I set up a choir that I ran in university, and we'd part of the warm-up to get people in the audition was to ask them, you know, how long you've been singing, what other singing have you done kind of thing, and to find out that in fact there's a huge difference between, for example, Welsh culture, German culture, Italian culture, and then English culture and various other cultures, especially English, is that don't sing as much as I was used to. And I used to think, gosh, these people haven't sung very much. And then I realised after a while of going, oh no, my perception is skewed. And then I picked up hand percussion. I'd always been interested in it in school. I just liked to play with it, just mess around with it. And then got into it in a much bigger way, weirdly enough, through poetry, which is an odd flex, I know, but ended up something that I would do to accompany poetry. And and then here's an even weirder flex, ended up somehow joining a bluegrass band in which I would play djembe and various other hand percussion, which is, I don't know what this looked like to the audience. They just went with it, but yeah.
So when you say hand percussion, you mean like drums that you actually hit
with your hands. Yeah, I think the coordination required to actually use sticks, especially if you're using sticks and feet, which is why I'm always really impressed with people who can do drum kits. It's just like, no.
Did you ever use those little cymbals that you can put on your fingers?
Castanets.
Castanets, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, we had got given those when I was very little. So, and annoyed the parents a great deal. Maracas, and don't give inquisitive children loud percussion instruments is definitely the vibe. So, of course, when my little sister was born, one of the things I made sure to do was to give her lots of instruments from about 2 or 3 onwards. Which I think was very responsible for me to do. And to be fair, she's studying music at Leeds now, so I feel like I helped nurture that.
You are vindicated.
Yeah.
And I encourage giving children loud instruments because they'll like it. Just do it somewhere far away from where you are if you don't want to be disturbed.
That's the one.
Now, Helen, in asking for a definition of hand percussion, were you trying to ferret out if Faye was just having a really like exciting name for clapping?
No, I've seen instruments before.
Okay.
Audience, I just wanted to mention that when Faye was talking about how Wales and various other countries have a very different singing culture to England, Laurie turned her camera back on just to pop into the Skype call to nod enthusiastically and then disappeared again. So a little behind the scenes thing for you there.
Nice.
So Faye, you've gone into this a little bit about bands and orchestras. Can you tell us anything more about, you said a bluegrass band.
Yeah, bluegrass band. I've played, like I say, djembe and various other instruments with them, and cajon when their main drummer wasn't available. A cajon is brilliant, by the way. Everyone should try and play one of those. They're gorgeous instruments.
What is it?
Cajon is, if you've ever seen someone sitting on a box and hitting it and
yes!
That? That's that's the cajon. So yeah, the weird coincidence is I was bought this for my 40th birthday, which is an excellent present, I think, to give someone their 40th. But it turned out to be made by someone who's playing when they were busking, inspired a poem that is what became one of my standards that I do, like kind of vocal percussion. So it kind of switches between vocal percussion, singing, and poetry. And then got this cajon, and it's, you know, signed by that cajon player and singer who inspired the poem. And I was just like, this is so cool. But yes, so I've played that with the bluegrass band and accompanying various poets. When I was in school, you didn't really have much choice. If you played an orchestral instrument, you were expected to join the orchestra. And
of course, yes.
Latterly, they had a wind band as well. For the orchestra, it was accepted that I was either second or third clarinet, because there are a fair number of clarinet players of better standards than mine, let's say. So when you get to, I don't know if any of you have played in it, or I suspect Jeffrey has, but you get desks within an orchestra. So you have like first violin, second violin, etc. But you also have it for some of the other instruments. So you're, and depending on how keen your school is to get anyone, just play something. But the further back on the desks you go, the less you have to play or the more basic you have to play. So sometimes all you're doing is watching other people to find out when you turn the page during all the rest bars before you go toot, 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 20 more rest bars kind of thing. So there was a lot of eating on the third desk for clarinet, I have to say. A lot of snacking.
I want an orchestra made entirely of people just making the noises with their mouths and someone just yelling toot.
It's bound to be out there. Bound to be.
Yeah.
There are orchestras with instruments made out of vegetables, which just makes me so, so excited.
Oh, lovely.
You've done that.
Oh, have any of you, oh my gosh, what's it called? The Portsmouth Sinfonia. I'm going to read from the Wikipedia.
All right.
Was an English orchestra founded by a group of students at the Portsmouth School of Art in 1970. The Sinfonia was generally open to anyone and ended up drawing players who were either people without musical training, or if they were musicians, ones that chose to play an instrument that was entirely new to them. So all of the stuff that they have released is people trying their very best to play music, but not actually being very good at it.
Glorious.
But it's got a really like wholesome history because they set it up because they just wanted people to play music. They didn't mind if it was good or not. They just wanted people to like have fun with it and try to. It says here on the Wikipedia, the only rules were that everyone had to come for rehearsals and that people should try their best to get it right and not intentionally play badly.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome, though. That's very cool.
And then, as the years passed, the musicians eventually became accustomed to and more skilled at playing their instruments, which diminished the novelty of the group.
No, they're no longer terrible. What?
Anyway, yeah, so that's my favourite orchestra in the world.
Okay.
And we shall move on. Kathy, tell me about you being in bands / orchestras.
Oh, gosh. Well, as a primary tuba player, I got whisked into bands and orchestras fairly quickly from the time I started playing. I learned in grade school around third grade, which I think is a little uncommon for U.S. schools. But because there is a rash of people not wanting to play the low instruments because they're not as glamorous, flute's very glamorous, a trumpet, a saxophone, you know, everything that you kind of see.
They get the lively bits to do.
Yeah. I got whisked into band, I think, you know, maybe 5 months after I started playing. And it's... I mean, I've always enjoyed it. I've played a lot of band and orchestra over the years. At times, playing in both, again, because of the scarcity of the instrument. Being a tuba, Faye was what you were saying earlier about the watching other people change the page of the music.
Yeah. Oh, well, the 17th rest.
He's playing tuba in the back. Oh, gosh. There's so many rests, so many measures of nothing to do that you just kind of trained yourself to hear when you had to come back in. Or you watched for the conductor to do something that was like, ah, I know when he moves his hand like this, that we're probably close to this measure where I should start paying attention.
Yep.
Oh, that was wonderful. Mm. So yeah, there is a lot of like impromptu improv learning within band sometimes because he couldn't count 1, 2, 3, 4 all the way up through 60 measures.
I'd forgotten that a lot of music involves counting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like, that's a major part of it. That's at least half of music.
At least.
Yeah. And if you can't go along for the ride with the main melody, then you're forced to like really count out the full time signatures and make sure you're keeping track of the rhythm and everything like that.
Oh, wow. No, we've changed to 3-4. Ah.
Yeah. And now we're going to go to 7-8, and now we're going to 7-6, and then we'll go back to 3-4.
That's the one.
It won't make sense, but believe it'll be fine.
It is interesting, isn't it? You kind of suspend the idea of you being the only, like, you're part of a bigger thing, and you have to kind of trust that whoever wrote it and whoever's conducting it can bring that together in a whole that the audience will perceive. Yeah, it can be a weird experience, because you know you're only like a really small component of the entire sound.
And every group that you're in has a different personality to it, like just by sheer nature of the instrument makeup. So like I always felt that orchestra was a lot more serious than band was at times, even if we're talking like a professional wind symphony versus a professional orchestra. There's still a characteristic, there's still a dynamic that's different between the two groups. Just like how everybody works in a wind band is different from how everybody works in a jazz band, is how everybody works different in a pit orchestra for like, you know, a theater production, things like that.
Do you think that's because of the kind of genres of music that tend to be most suitable?
I think so. I think, like, for example, jazz, it's encouraged that you improv on things. It's encouraged that you're you kind of go off the rails a little bit in terms of just trying to be creative with a performance and letting loose and swinging the eighths and kind of tweaking the triplets and all that fun stuff. Whereas in orchestra, you have decades, sometimes centuries of established music of historical repute. And it's like a core part of the classical music repertoire that you must do this a certain way. You must be precise. And if you don't get it right, anybody who knows their music will point it out to you and make sure you know.
Oof.
And in that sense, it kind of leads to a difference in personalities between the instruments, too, in different groups, I think. Like, Jeffrey, you were saying that you learned violin. Oh, so much respect for learning violin. That takes so much training at the start that, I mean, it's hard to pick up a string instrument at the in the early years as opposed to like a wind instrument. You can get results out of a wind instrument pretty quickly as a beginner, like to a point where you feel comfortable with the notes on the page. But with a string instrument, there's just so much to take in and so much you need to train before you can feel comfortable with playing.
I mean, I guess in some ways I'm lucky in that I was playing violin before I was learning to do anything else other than, like, I guess, share or, you know, maybe my colors or numbers I learned beforehand.
Oh, but like, gosh.
You know, yeah, actually, the story of how I got into violin is funny. As a child in my grandmother's house, my mother's mother, I found her grandmother, so my great-grandmother's violin, like hidden down in a basement somewhere. And I was like, I would like to play this. And, you know, I'm like, again, I'm like 3 or 4. And they're like, okay, well, we did want to get you on an instrument, so you want to play violin? And apparently I was very into it. And so I got a very, very small violin and started playing. And actually the one over here on my wall, my main acoustic violin, is that same violin that we restored.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
And I still play.
That's lovely.
There are a couple of family instruments that have been passed down. I also play my great aunt Peachy's tenor banjo. Peachy was a performer for the rodeos.
Oh, cool.
And so she never had a day of musical training in her life, but could play any instrument that she picked up and played for the rodeos out in Montana. And I ended up with her banjo. I don't know. I like to say that I am kind of broadly not deeply musical. I can kind of play most instruments. I don't pretend to, you know, I sing, but I can sing in a punk band. I can't sing in a Broadway musical.
were you in bands and stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So I, you know, in my younger years, you know, elementary, middle, high school, I played in a couple of orchestras and a couple of chamber music quartets. And then sometime in high school, I got an electric violin.
Ooh.
And kind of never looked back. And so I played in a couple of punk bands and an Irish punk band that was like right in the era where like Dropkick Murphys and Flogging Molly were really popular here in the States.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
And then I had a couple of different like acoustic trios that I played out with here in Chicago for a while. I'm not currently playing with a band. Mostly just because time, but I miss it a little bit. Yeah. Especially with like a really loud, good rock and roll band. I love playing with orchestras. It was a lot of fun, but there is no sensation like, you know, three people with amps cranked way too loud and your drummer and it's like surfing a wave of sound and you're just barely staying on top of it. It's a really delightful experience.
Lovely.
Oh, I love it.
Also, I can't hear any noises above like 1400, oh boy. 1200 hertz now.
Oh. It's just destroyed. Okay.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
Well, on that slightly upsetting note, we're going to take a break and we will see you again after these ads. And welcome back. So, we've talked about our various musical histories. I have another question, and this time it's about other people. I want to find out what musicians you each admire, if there are any in particular, like if there are any particular performers that you really enjoy.
I would actually say I don't have any. It's more just I don't have any that I've been focused into, but maybe as a counter offer to answer that question, I have always really admired some people's ability to compose for other instruments.
Go on.
One that sticks out in my mind especially is Eric Whitaker.
Oh, yeah.
Who's an amazing choir composer. He's done a lot of wonderful singing pieces. He's spearheaded a virtual choir that performs with singers from all over the world through the internet well before the pandemic happened, and has always been really innovative in how he composes his music. But I fell in love with how he wrote things for band before he got into his groove with choir, because the way he composed meant that he found ways to have the instruments do things they don't normally get to do. A lot of creative, illustrative music. So, like, there's one piece in particular that he wrote ages ago called Ghost Train. And it's for Wind Symphony. And it's basically, there's a whole story that goes behind this piece of music that illustrates this paranormal setting where this train is moving through this ghostly, dark land. And you hear the band as you hear this train just like starts revving up, and you hear the percussion bringing in like the chugga 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 of the train. And you hear the horns and the flutes and the clarinets all helping to create this wonderfully massive, elaborate, like train sound that's slightly eerie as like the woo woo starts going off, and the low brass brings in this massive like sound of like the presence of the engine and everything. I love when people think about instruments in a different way that allows them not to be pigeonholed. And so I admire that kind of work. And I admire a lot of music that is illustrative and fun. It's kind of like what Jeffrey was saying before of, you know, feeling that kind of drive when you're in a band,
yeah,
or when like you're in a punk band or you're in a rock band, of like performing for a crowd. Like the composers that can do that for an orchestra or a band is amazing, because we don't always get that feeling when we're playing.
Yeah.
I'd love to build off of that. I have two, I guess, two kind of answers for your question on like musicians I have been. I mean, the first is I have just gone down the deepest John Darnielle mountain goat's hole. And so I think if there's any musician that I'm spending a lot of time with right now and have over the last couple of years, it's his music. Just a fantastic lyricist and thinks about the world and music in really interesting ways. But branching off, Kathy, what you were saying, I think there's also, I have discovered lately a real love for, you know, sampling is maybe the easiest way to talk about it, but things like Plunderphonics from John Oswald. Famously coined in his essay, which has just the best title, Plunderphonics, or Audio Piracy as a Compositional Prerogative.
Okay. I love it.
He's got an amazing, the place to start is DAB, D-A-B, in which he somehow makes Michael Jackson undanceable. So it's a really cool piece. But also, you know, I think about the first time I heard Steve Reich's It's Gonna Rain, which is just it's a piece that is played using a pair of tape decks with the same sample of this preacher preaching, and he uses them and like lets them go out of sync so that they're, you know, they get some phase cancellation, and it's a just incredible piece of music using this one piece of audio that, you know, I will just sit down and listen to every once in a while. It's a really devastating and beautiful piece of music.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Or maybe someone like Chris Wilson, who was a audio engineer for the BBC, did a bunch of their documentaries. And then apparently the what I hear is that in his contract, he had it written in that anything he recorded, he could also use for himself. So he would go out and, you know, record trains all over Europe and use that to, you know, create the documentary, and then come back and create these beautiful pieces of music using the train recordings that he captured. So yeah, I have been really interested in musicians who are using, you know, tape and other things that are not typically thought of as musical instruments, and creating what is either recognizably or maybe you would say arguably music out of it.
Debatably music. Okay.
And Faye, what do you think? Like, do you have anyone you admire?
I'm glad I got to the end of this because I've spent this time trying to work out. But I realised that a lot of the people that I admire, as in, wow, that's amazing, I could listen to that for ages, or I, you know, wish I could do that, or I'd love to work with them kind of thing. A lot of them are people who aren't that well renowned, or they're just people I've jammed with or stuff like that. And I'm trying to know it, but which is lovely. But it means I'm not necessarily able to do you the favour of being able to connect to their music in the same way. But I realise that one of the things that I'm particularly drawn to is especially multi-instrumentalists, people who can just pick up a lot of different things. And people who are generous, I think that's probably the best way of putting it, who don't necessarily put themselves first and foremost when it comes to performance. And I don't know if this is just a background as being a choral singer. I mean, and again, when I used to audition people for the choir, I wouldn't necessarily always take the best singers, like technically the best singers. It'd be about the people who would be able to work in a choir, if you know what I mean. The people who you'd go, right, this is someone who can harmonise. This is someone who can listen to other people and isn't necessarily putting themselves first, even if they're an amazing... And you can have these amazing solo singers who are able to make that switch to being a good choral singer as well. And I was just thinking... someone I know from work, of all things, we just kind of got falling into talking about this and then ended up doing some collaborative stuff as poet and musician. His name is Gavinash Sirisena, and he is, again, a multi-instrumentalist and very modest about it as well. I say, wow, you play the sitar. And he's like, oh, I've got a sitar. And I'm like, sure, but you actually know how to... It's not just sitting there covered in dust. You know what to do with that kind of thing. You know, he plays keyboard, he plays... lots of hand percussion. He plays guitar like it's not a guitar. Like one of the pieces we used to do together, it sounded more like a harp or something like that. He was able to do this amazing high pizzicato stuff that made you just go, I don't know what you just did. I didn't even know that guitars could do that. And yeah, that could spin all sorts of wonderful kind of images in my head. But he plays with other bands who, again, aren't the kind where it's like a coincidence of egos, but is in fact a proper band together. Or anytime I've seen him session with other people and you just go, he's making everyone else like larger. He's, you know, he's bringing it all up as well as being spectacularly good by himself. Similarly, I suppose a more famous example would be Nitin Sawhney. And again, a lot of his stuff is not about him. It's about who he can bring together and the stories he can tell. All of his albums are... they always have an overarching theme, and they always tell stories within the individual pieces as well as across the album. And it'll be about lots of other musicians, lots of other ways of talking about the world. Yeah, I guess I admire people who you can harmonise with and you can work with. Like there's a bassist slash vocalist called Ian Newman, who plays with, what are they calling themselves? Anarcho-punk spoken word something or other. They're the anti-poet.
Excellent.
Yeah, they're the anti-poet. And there's one guy who's like a former punk musician doing proper old school ranty poetry and occasional singing. And there's Ian, who's doing double bass and various other instruments and singing with that as well, and just various interjections to kind of make it work. And again, he's an exceptional musician in himself, but he also brings everything else up. He's also an absolute dream to harmonize with, which is really good. And he plays with that bluegrass band when they do the festival lineup. So yeah. Yeah, that's something I'm, again, missing with pandemic is that bit where you improvise harmonies with other people, where you go,
yeah,
I don't know if we'll ever be able to do that again, but that five-part harmony that we just did then, that was frankly close to orgasmic, that happened then, that will possibly never happen again in any of our lifetimes, that moment, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get that back. There'll be space and time to do those things. But
Eventually.
Yeah, yeah.
We are coming to the end of our time.
Ooh.
So I want to end on like a quick fire question. And that question is, if you could learn any instrument that you don't already know, which one would it be? Because for me, it would be the piano. The piano is one of my favourite instruments to listen to, and it would be really cool to be able to play it. What about the rest of you?
Just one?
Just one.
You know, I would say that my brain says piano. I would be so much more employable in various fields if I could do more than, you know, plunk and hunt and peck in much in the way that, you know, people type. I can hunt and peck on a keyboard, but if I could really play, that would be great. But my heart says cello. I love the cello.
Yeah. Oh, and what a beautiful sound.
Maybe some of it is just like envy as a violinist because they've got those big, deep notes. But it's just such a beautiful instrument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it is. My clarinet teacher, halfway through our time together, started learning the cello. And I swear, at one point, half our lessons were just her rhapsodizing about how amazing the cello was. Because you hug it. And she was talking in terms that, frankly, I'm not sure that like a 15-year-old should have been listening to an adult talking about. But yeah, it was, for her, it was a very sensual experience for her. And I was like, yeah, man. Yeah, it certainly looks it. Yeah.
Well, good for her.
Yeah, good for her. For me, probably any stringed instrument. It's not something I've ever been... I've tried, but they don't kind of take for me. So I'd love to be able to do that. Any of them, frankly, just anything that is stringed. So when Jeffrey was kind of like reeling out the list, I was like, God, any of those, that would be amazing. Like, I can get a tune out of any fip or flute or whatever, and I think they're like a lot of different woodwind, but like, you get chords with strings. That would be amazing. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, so that, basically, a whole family of any of those, pick one.
And Kathy, what about you?
Oh, yeah, where to start? I mean, I love a stringed instrument. I'm not very good about picking them up and taking to them, but oh gosh, a cello, a string bass, a viola, a mandolin. I mean, all of those. It'd be wonderful to just pick it up without, like, pick it up and know that your fingers knew what they were doing instinctively. Yeah. Like, they just kind of start playing on their own. It's like, oh, that would be wonderful. A guitar. Again, I've tried my best at bass, but it's not taken to strings well. So I've got some there, but it's nothing like pulling out a good guitar riff.
Yeah,
you know, when you're watching a rock band. I think finally I would love to be able to pick up an accordion and go to
town. Oh, hell yeah!
Oh, I do own an accordion, and I can play half of it. I can play the chord part.
Yeah, right. There's one easy part and one hard
part.
Yeah.
The piano keys, actually, it's that most of them are broken, so I haven't really been able to learn.
Okay.
And
yeah,
I haven't had a time where it's made sense to get it fixed.
Oh,
I have a didgeridoo. I've just remembered. I don't know why I have a didgeridoo, but I've never been able to get much out of it.
Love a didgeridoo. Oh, that's awesome.
We love a didgeridoo.
That definitely annoy the neighbors. That would be awesome.
I've developed a very bad habit of enjoying all the really obnoxious instruments. So I love an accordion, a tuba. I love listening to bagpipes. I'm sorry.
Yes,
bagpipes are wonderful.
They rock.
They are.
I would love to be able to learn to play a bagpipe too. That would be so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful. Right. We are now out of time. The pun not intended. Thank you so much for talking about music and instruments with me. I really like the episodes we do about music. Mm. It's just something that like people have such passion about, and it's so lovely to see. Mm-hmm. Thank you, listeners, for coming along with us. And I hope that maybe you learn something and maybe you are inspired to pick up a new instrument or an old friend of an instrument. I will see you on the next episode. But for now, it's goodbye from me. Goodbye. And it's goodbye from all of them. Would you like to say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Bye.
Farewell. Bye-bye.
Enthusiasm is a podcast distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 international license. It is directed by Helen Gould, produced by Lowry Ann Davis, with executive producers Alexander J. Newell and April Sumner. This episode of Enthusiasm was edited by Tessa Broom, Lowry Ann Davis, and Catherine Ranella. Thanks for listening.